Welcome to the Empowered Dancers podcast, where we talk openly about all things empowerment in the salsa, bachata and kizomba scene. Join me as I talk about the highs and lows of Latin dancing, as well as interviewing some incredible people on their stories, experiences and points of view, both in the dancing and beyond. Go to empowereddancers.com/5ways for 5 tips to boost your confidence on the social dance floor. I'm Bobby Miles, that's Bobby with an IE and Miles as in distance. Welcome back. Today we have Helen Daniel with us. Helen is not a dancer at this point in her life, but she is an extremely valued guest nonetheless. Helen runs Outside the Box Sensory, and she is a neurodivergent well-being practitioner, author and public speaker of all things neurodivergence and neurosensory. She is a rising star in the public speaking world of ND and all things neurodivergent, and she helps individuals and families to give space to neurodivergence, to empower people to better understand their ND friends, and for neurodivergent to be celebrated, not separated. Welcome, Helen.
Hello. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Yes.
Fabulous. It's
just about there.
It's lovely to be here. I'm so excited for our conversation.
Yeah, we always have such good conversations. I kind of wish we could record most of them.
Yeah, we're always getting into things and talking about, I know that we're going to have such brilliant conversations today now. Yeah. And we're always talking about empowerment as well. So
yes, yeah, it's a massive crossover in our two spaces.
Definitely. And trying to help neurodivergent people to break out of those social constructs and the things that are fed to them that they feel they have to fit into boxes. And I think that it crosses over beautifully into the areas you're talking about as well.
Really does, yes, because we are all things empowerment and empowered dancers. But neurodivergence is not a regular everyday conversation in the Latin dancing space. I don't think that's through a desire for it not to be. It's just that it's not often raised. So thank you very much for coming and giving space to that with us.
I think it's a really important conversation, actually, that needs to happen. Not just, I mean, what I advocate for is for sensory accessibility to be talked about in schools, but actually it needs to be talked about across different genres and across, you know, every environment that we're in. Sensory accessibility and the way different people experience the world is a really important conversation, because it impacts the way people interact with one another. And it also impacts how empowered people feel when they come into spaces. So neurodivergent people coming into dance spaces might need more support with that empowerment conversation.
Yeah. Yes, because there's this, you mentioned social construct straight off the bat, and I thought, oh yes, very much so, because there is that in the dance space as well, a kind of these unwritten rules that we seem to have made ourselves think we need to follow.
Yeah, so I think that there's so many people in the world that have gone through the schooling system, and especially in this country, in the UK, the schooling system has a expected pathway for children.
Yes, massively.
And there are certain codes and patterns that are given precedence over other codes and patterns that can be learned. And that means that at this current time, English and maths are incredibly important to the powers that be. And they are tested and they are looked at as, you know, something that children need to attain.
Yeah.
Science to a certain extent. But then children that excel in areas outside of that are now seen as neurodivergent or seen as not accessing the education that is needed. And yet we have all these children that are creative, they're dancers, they're sparky, they're, you know, fabulous. They've got such talents. And we are telling them that because they aren't fitting this box, all the way through their schooling, you're a little bit broken. You're not quite inside the box. You're not making it.
Because you don't fit into that. If you don't fit into the excelling academically, but you're pretty good at drama. Well, you're very
Yes.
good at art. Why is there a
Yeah,
but?
it's an extra. It's a
Yes.
and that's not an empowering way to talk to a child.
My goodness, no. Yes. And as
And
two
then,
ex-teachers here, we are speaking from experience, very much so.
and I do think that it has changed over time because when I was teaching at the beginning of my teaching practice, there were those emotional starters. There was that cross-curricular. There was a little bit more of bringing those things together, and it's become narrower and narrower as we've gone along. And that means that when neurodivergent people move into adulthood, they're often moving into adulthood feeling broken because often they don't know that they have a divergent sensory system. Therefore, their interest in their pattern recognition, if it's within, say it's within dance, and that is their passion and that is their interest, they're not moving into adulthood necessarily feeling super proud of that ability and, their spark that they have.
They're put inside a box, and as you say, they're not being made to feel like they can break out of it. And this is where
Exactly.
out of the box sensory comes in. Love that name.
So I very much advocate for spaces for children and young people that outside of those boxes, they are celebrated. And when children learn via their interests, that's the best way to engage.
Oh, yeah.
It's the best way to engage, obviously. And therefore, if that is the way that humans learn, that is actually the way our education should be structured. If that was the way our education was structured, we would have children and young people coming out of school, moving into adulthood, feeling really proud and having felt a sense of achievement for being creative, for being artistic, for being dramatic, in drama, being
Yes.
dramatic, for being a dancer. And the other thing that happens is, so with regards to autistic and ADHD children, oh, sorry, they are often told that their way of being is inappropriate.
Yes.
And they do something quite a lot of neurodivergent people communicate in a way that is called info dumping.
Okay, yes.
So a lot of autistic and ADHDers access language and communication in a way that's difficult, different to typical. And then they become info dumpers, which means they'll talk really excitedly about their passion and their interest.
Yeah.
And then, if they're with another neurodivergent person, that person will talk really excitedly back at them about their interest.
Yeah.
And they will have the same sort of communication and it will gel beautifully often. But when that type of communication comes up against typical communication, in our schools at the moment, we say typical communication, as in a back and forth, is the appropriate way to communicate.
Yes.
And that info dumping is inappropriate and needs to be changed.
Yeah.
And this communication bias has a huge detrimental effect on neurodivergent people. And so when they go into adulthood and they're moving into spaces, they might mask their voices. They might mask their neurodivergent communication and try and fit in.
Yeah.
And that's a really important thing for us to know in dance spaces, in any spaces where you're socializing, you
Yeah, and
know.
massively, because I'm already applying that in my head, thinking that for a neurodivergent leader, that this could be a wonderful space in dancing because you have more of the creative input. You can info dump away and everyone's happy. Whereas if you're a neurodivergent or perhaps an autistic or ADHD follower, that might actually be even more difficult because as a follower, you do have space to express yourself, well, you should. but a lot of what you're doing is receiving and reacting to input given to you. So that could make things even harder, perhaps. What do you think?
Yeah, so with regards to, with the masking, often yeah. neurodivergent people don't know they're doing it.
Yes.
And so they're in those spaces and they might not feel comfortable to verbalize, oh, this feels uncomfortable for me.
Mm.
Or this isn't working in this way. Or you're going to have a lot of people that are neurodivergent that are amazing dancers. You have a lot of hypermobility. I'm hypermobile. When I was younger, I was a gymnast and I used to just cartwheel everywhere. And it was just the movement and the cartwheeling and I was just moving in movement all the time because my body and my brain yearned for that movement.
Right.
So if you've got that sort of profile, you're going to have a lot of dancers, you know, coming yes. out of that. And so understanding that this is their outlet and this is their creative moment and this is their time to let go.
Yeah.
But knowing that they could be masking their communication still and enabling that, you know, freedom. I think it's always you know, I'm sure you talk about it in Empowerment with Women. It's about listening to your instincts.
Yes, massively. Yeah, that crosses over so much into predominantly followers' experiences in dancing, where you're not entirely comfortable with the situation, but figuring out how to raise it or even pinpoint exactly what it is extremely difficult. It takes regular practice, it takes a lot of reflection, and even then you might come across another situation the next day and go, well, that didn't feel right. I really don't know why. And we often, well, women in particular, but followers will sometimes feel rude that they don't want to say anything in case they're perceived as being rude or insulting a lead style. But actually, it's just their own discomfort. It may have nothing to do with the lead in terms of it's nothing the lead has intentionally done. I think we get a lot of, from what I experienced so far, a lot of masking in the dance space. Not all the time, but yeah. I think everyone has their own experience of it.
Yeah, and I do think that women throughout their lives, I mean, I've done work with Emma Weil from Courage and Chamomile. And she does a similar thing to me, but for women. So it's breaking women out of the boxes.
Yes.
And I didn't realize how, you know, far I was into this box.
Yes.
Because in my relationships, all sorts of relationships around me, I had learned not to speak up.
Yeah.
Because speaking up for me could be detrimental. It could not in my adult life, but because I was a neurodivergent child.
Yeah. Massively. It was part of your habitus. You learned that not being big or not making a scene, not speaking up was the most effective way for you to smoothly navigate through your childhood. And our childhood baggage is what most of us need to go back and look at when we're in adulthood going, I think I'm ready to reflect on life now and start to unpick these things.
Yeah, very much so. So I've got multiple marginalized identities.
Yeah.
An ethnic minority.
Wait, can you see that on your screen?
What? No.
Oh, nothing. Okay, in that case, carry on.
I'm an ethnic minority. I'm a woman. I'm neurodivergent. There's many different parts to me that have been minimized throughout my life.
Yeah.
And that means that when I formed friendships, when I was in a power situation,
yeah,
I saw myself as the smaller out of the two always. I was always like, I need to make myself smaller so that I fit your idea of what I should be.
Yes.
And breaking out of that was, it was about giving myself permission to say no, to feel my feelings and to show my feelings.
Yes.
Even if I didn't know the ins and outs of what those feelings were, to feel safe and empowered to show it.
Yeah, acknowledge them, give them space.
Give them space and allow the other people. What I wasn't doing was allowing the other people around me to step up.
Yes.
And to meet me at a level where I actually was.
Yeah.
And so this empowered me. The conversations we had were about, you are equal.
Yeah.
We are all equal. We are all human beings
Yes.
on this, you know.
Yeah.
So we just have to walk into spaces and feel that confidence and that empowerment.
Yep.
But it's much more challenging when you've had most of your life, I'm 44, most of your life being told to be smaller.
Yes.
It's a difficult journey to go on.
Oh, it's massively difficult. Yeah, because you have to kind of unlearn things that you've learned and accepted as truth, as fact. And now you're kind of thinking, oh, okay. So the way I'm trying to do that is that I give myself permission to make mistakes or to get things wrong. So if I feel like I need to say something and I'm not, the thing holding me back is I'm not sure if it's right. I'm not sure if it's my place to say it. I'm not sure if they're going to receive what I have to say. Well, I don't want to insult, but I've realized I'm not going to learn without trying and getting it wrong. So hopefully I won't get it wrong too much, but let me give myself permission to try. I'll say what I have to say. And if it all goes wrong, I will apologize and I will try and figure out in my own time, how am I going to improve on that going forward?
Yeah. And so, yeah, with the making, one of the things that has helped me so much in being able to do this work is the fact that I'm in a very secure partnership,
yeah,
which was safe. And therefore, I could speak up in safety. And this is huge. The intention behind the words is the most important thing.
Yes.
So receiving the communication of somebody, you might receive neurodivergent communication and you might not understand the way they phrase something, or it might feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But it's the intention. And I think that would be the same with dance, because it's the intention behind what's happened. You should feel safe to speak up. But if the other person says the intention behind that was this, there has to be a dialogue.
Yeah.
Where this person feels safe to say it and this person feels okay to explain it and this person can say, but I still don't want you to do that.
Yeah, and that should be okay.
And that should be okay, yes.
Exactly, yes. If a lead has led something in a certain way and a follower thinks, okay, I'm going to say something, they do, and the lead will most likely go, oh my goodness, that wasn't my intent to make you feel like that. I thought this. And then it's up to that follower then to go, okay, but let's not do that move. Or perhaps they'll go, okay, now you've explained it, I can, works for me, because now they understand what the intention is or whatnot.
The other thing is, we all have different sensory responses to things.
Oh, yeah.
So what somebody feels comfortable experiencing in a dance, someone else might not feel comfortable experiencing in a dance.
100%.
And that's no reflection on the other the lead.
The lead or the follow, yeah.
It's not. It's just, actually, this feels physically, in a sensory way, uncomfortable, yep, for me. And actually, often, because we don't talk about sensory divergence, that person doesn't know why it feels uncomfortable to them, but it doesn't to the person next to them. They can't explain that.
Yes, I think we're going to have to do a whole other episode on sensory divergence at some point, because it's a massive thing in dancing, because dancing is such a non-verbal communication. I think we've got loud music. It's difficult to speak. I tend to not speak much because my voice is like, oh no, hark back to teaching in a noisy classroom. And so we kind of just, it's mostly non-verbal. for a lot of people. And
And that's another reason that many neurodivergent people will love it.
yes. Oh, yeah.
Because for a lot of neurodivergent people, speech and auditory, taking in speech and speaking is effortful.
Right, yes.
So it's tiring. People say peopling is tiring. Neurodivergents sometimes
Yes.
say peopling is tiring. So we talk about something called Spoon's theory, and in neurodivergent spaces, you have a certain amount of spoons, and some things deplete your spoons,
Yeah.
and some things add to your spoons.
Okay.
Okay. And for me, peopling adds to my spoons as long as I don't do it too much. If I overdo it, it completely gets rid of them and I have to start all over again and I'm
Wipes out your
exhausted.
spoons.
It wipes out my spoons. And there are other people who, because it's effortful to speak, because you're trying to communicate in a way that is going to be acceptable to other people, because listening to speech is tiring, the whole thing. It's just tiring. So going into a dance space where you can move your body, you not in a speech-based way, and you can feel that closeness to someone.
It's such joy.
I
It really is. Yeah.
mean, so I don't go out and da do dance in the way that you do, but I love dance. I love dancing. I'm like a kitchen dancer.
Yes.
And
All for the little at home, feel a dance party coming on. I'm like, oh, I've got this one.
But for me, dancing is a stimulatory experience for me because that's where I get my joy. Yeah, so I do talk about in my book, I talk about the fact that we all use stim behaviors, but we have narrowed them into our hobbies. So all of our hobbies use repetitive movements. If you're doing squash, you're using a repetitive movement. If you are running, you're doing a repetitive movement. Well, even when you're dancing, you're
Yep, there are
using
combinations that repeat.
repetitive.
Completely.
And with neurodivergent children and young people and adults, they have a lot more going on in their brains, me being one of them. I'm a multi-sensory learner, so my brain is like a pinball machine where my different senses have to like ping off each other, and there is a lot of activity going on up there all the time. It's like a busy old place, and because there's all that electromagnetic activity going on, I'm fizzy. I have a fizzy body, and so that's why when I was younger, I was cartwheeling and dancing and moving, and then as I got older, we take that away in schools more and more and more, so that the only time you can move your body is at playtime. But ADHDers are like,
Still want to go.
I need to move my body. So a lot of children with polytropic brains, which is the typical way that you take in information, are happily taking in information in the way it's served in school. So their brains are not pinging about. And their bodies are not as fizzy, so they can limit their movement to hobbies, to darts, to, these times when you go and do it.
This is my physical activity slot of the day.
And I
Right,
can
yeah.
hold my need to move in because it's not as much as a
Yeah.
neurodivergent person might have. And therefore, when we get into the zone of doing that movement, it's like a release.
Yes.
It's like a beautiful release
Oh,
of,
yeah.
and if you're doing something, so this is one of the things I talk about with stim. So when it's much more concentrated in a lot of autistic children, so you notice it because there's the rocking and there's the swinging and there's the moving. But oftentimes they'll try and say, well, do this movement instead because this movement's not appropriate. So spinning in the classroom, they might say that's not appropriate. Let's try this movement instead. But we know that if somebody said to you, "Oh, don't do dance, go and do squash," wouldn't feel the same.
Not going to sit well with me either.
Wouldn't have the impact that you need it to have. So
Massive. That is a fantastic comparison.
we seek out the types of movement and the types of sensory experiences. So I love swimming. That sensory experience of being in the water and moving my body. I like hugs. I like that feeling. That's wonderful to me. There are other neurodivergent people who they really don't like the feeling of getting wet and then having to get dry and all the transitions and all of those things. So, we find the things that bring us joy. And we, as human beings, across the spectrum of neurodivergence to neurotypical, we're all doing that. So, definitely in spaces, in the spaces you're moving in, this is a really important conversation to be having.
Definitely. And that is what we're aiming to do here, having conversations that matter. A phrase I know you're familiar with.
I feel like, we're trying to move the needle. We're
Yes.
trying to change the world. We are.
Step by step.
We're trying to be part of the movements towards change for empowering women, for empowering, but also, I think it's not, we're empowering men as well. We're empowering
100%.
LGBT. QB, we're empowering all genders because there will be people across the spectrum that need this these conversations to be happening.
Thank you so much for all of your wonderful contributions. This has been a really valued piece to have in Empowered Dancers. It's like we said at the beginning, neurodivergency isn't an everyday conversation in the dance space, which makes it all the more important to bring it in and make it part of our conversations and considerations. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Bobby.
If people want to reach out and find you, Helen, and want to learn more about your wonderful work, can you give us a couple of places they can look?
So, you can find my book on Amazon.
So we've got Neurosensory Divergence, Autistic Languages, A Roadmap to an Equitable Life for Autistic Children. Beautiful.
And the other place you can find me is I have a website, which is Outside the Box Sensory. I'm on Instagram at OTB Sensory.
You're everywhere, Helen. Fantastic. Thank you so much. And we will speak again soon, I have no doubt.
Thank you.
Bye bye. Thank you for listening to the Empowered Dancers podcast. If there's an aspect of the dance scene you would like to hear about, or a particular teacher you would like to hear from, drop me a message and I will try to make it happen. Make sure you subscribe to get every episode as it comes out. Thank you so much for the comments and questions you are already sharing. I really, really appreciate it, and I look forward to serving you in next week's episode.